And welcome to another session of Reflections in the Dark. Sorry, folks, I just flew in from Birmingham, and boy, are my arms tired. Wow, anyway. Oh, this is crazy. I was good until I started talking. Well, we're laughing live from the Firefall Studio, broadcastingspeaker.com. We archive our shows here as well as Block Talk Radio and on iTunes, Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Oh, Lord. Help me, Lord. Wednesday night, 7 p.m. on the porch, which is very serious, not like this. We do a Bible study. You can support us at FirefallTalkRadio.com, SupernaturalResponse.net, Twitter, at FirefallTalk, at SRT612. And now let me bring my brother Joe on so I can mute my mic. Hey, bro.
Well, just, you know what? First of all, everybody, I'm so happy I'm here. But I just want you to know, I have never tried laughing at any time. It's always been him. This time, he just laughed. I didn't even say anything. That's the part that kills me. He just bursted out laughing, and then I lost it. So I just, I'm glad you guys are here. It's just really bizarre. I don't know if it's a paranormal phenomenon of laughing that's going on, but we haven't stopped laughing. I don't even know why I'm laughing. I just got tears. I'm handing it off. I can't.
I think I just pulled something. Oh, anyway, that was funny. That was like being back in Sister Wilhelmina's class in fifth grade. It's his fault. He did it. I didn't do anything. That was funny. Oh, anyway, I am back from Birmingham. Great weekend. Did a great teaching that I will have the video up, and then I will put it up on a private link. You'll have to register to get it, but you'll be able to see it. A lot of really special things going on out there. There's been a significant shift in the paranormal, in the supernatural, and in the spirit that's showing itself in the world and in recent revelations, which I shared this weekend. What's really funny is, well, not funny, but maybe funny, that this stuff that I shared, as I worked on it, I was afraid that people wouldn't get it. So I finally finished the PowerPoint at 9 a.m. on the morning of doing it at 10. And the people received it, but luckily I left a lot of time for questions, because it was really one of those out there concepts that I backed up with science and scripture and all those things. So I'm hoping that people get it, but there's just a lot of stuff happening right now that we've experienced. And that's, you know, we're going to reflect here on Reflections in the Dark, of why we started this show in May of 2010. And you know, when we first came together with SRT, which started in July of 2007.
We did not laugh like this, though. Go ahead.
No, we did. We were very, very serious. Very serious. Why so serious? Yes, we were. When we started this, it was in response, both SRT and Reflections in the Dark, as my dog Mac barks in the other side, on the other side of the house, was in response to the paranormal community, the paranormal investigation craze, ghost hunters, all of that. It was a response to, I guess, the ridiculousness and the error that we saw. And that's why we have stayed with it in this commitment to shine the light on not just what's happening in the demonic and in the shadows, but the people that are actually inadvertently helping what's going on. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I definitely agree. And, you know, prior to meeting Richard, you know, we all had our different roads of the paranormal and, you know, the supernatural, and from scripture level, from a secular And just that craze, that paranormal craze, just kind of put a spin on everything. But, you know, during the years, with even with the going through with SRT in the very beginning, I have to tell you, it was, and I still say this, it was so different for me to be a part of, say, you know, doing a mission when we did our first mission together, and the vision, and, you know, to be there and go through it and to see the results that you get, you know, it gave me a whole different look on life, spiritually, and what really is going on behind the scenes and what needs to be done. So it has taught me a lot, you know, throughout the years, and, you know, and especially that being part of SRT and the birth of SRT has just been something that, it's just, I don't know. I changed our lives.
Yeah, it changed our lives.
That's really what it for me, it really did. And taking it through all these years, even now, we got frustrated. There were times we were just kind of going through the motions with things and going through the shows. And should we do this? Should we keep this going? And we just kind of plugged along. And every so often we'd get that lift or that revelation or something would happen and it would keep you going. And you were just saying, okay, when is that time going to come where we can actually truly expose and shine the light and taking that beyond what we did with Reflections in the Dark, you know? So right. Yeah, you're right. It's been one of those, it's been a long road, but I can see the reason why that patience had to play a part in a lot of it.
You know, it was amazing. As I was doing the teaching and working on the seminar, I began to see that what I taught this weekend was, I don't want to say the culmination because I know more will come, but it's the continuation of revelation that started for me in January of 2007, as I mentioned in my book. And then in 2010, I was finally felt the release to start to talk about it. I didn't actually present it to a group of people till March of 2011 when we did the C conference in Groton. So I let it sink and germinate and you know, cultivate over 4 years, almost 4 years before I spoke about it. And I'm not the kind of person that rushes revelation out there like everybody else does to make a buck, to sell a book, to do a DVD. I want to make sure that I can verify it, that I can back it up, and that I understand it, and it actually is verifiably true. And that's why we have continued. And you're right, I hadn't thought about it. There have been times of frustration, why are we doing this? And then you get a letter from somebody, an email from somebody saying, hey, you've changed my life. You've changed my viewpoint. I really love what you do. So we keep going. And now here we are, 2017, and it's just seemed to have coalesced everything into this one path that, you know, one of the things that about the paranormal, and then I'm going to share something exciting to our audience, is as I did my research for this seminar, and I talked about the paranormal. The first paranormal television show was in 1949. It was Ripley's Believe It or Not. But the whole genre did not really kick off until 1979, I think it is, or 1976. I don't have it in front of me. But I think 76. Since that time, there have been 259 TV shows or documentaries that have been produced. That's like an average of 6 a year. But in 2014, 28 shows were on the air at some point. 28! That is amazing. And while it has slowed down a little bit, as you will know from the emails you keep getting, is that the hunger for this and the hunger for something new and the fact that they know that there's an audience for it, the fact that they know that they can sell commercials for it, has never died. But the problem is the information has not changed. The deceit of the shows have not changed. I'll just call it what it is. And that's what we have tried to keep exposing and getting people, our audience and whoever else they share this with, to listen, is that what you see on TV and what you see in the documentaries is not necessarily true, just realistically, but it's also definitely not true spiritually.
Definitely not. I mean, I could say it this way. even having been a part of some of the shows in the paranormal world, and everything that you see on the TV and on the screen, I mean, sometimes it looks powerful, or it looks like, wow, and there are some good stories you tell, and there are some cases that you could be on that is definitely, you know, worth telling. The problem is watching it, seeing it, knowing how much time you have, the commercials, like you said, Richard, everything is timed perfectly, and there are certain things that are just not going to be said that went on in the case. Things that are probably really important and vital to that case is going to be left out because it hasn't been made to be dramatic or powerful. So they're going to twist things. They're going to do things. And that's what I think has happened. And people are seeing that. And I think that you watch certain shows and, you know, you get tired of them and you see the same old thing. But that doesn't stop the people, the viewers, the listeners out there, from being hungry to find answers. So no matter what, even a show that, because I get these emails that come in, even a show that I might not be happy with that I was on, or maybe they didn't tell everything totally the way it should, it does frustrate me. But the power of it is somebody out there who's watching, they might look at you different and say, hey, there's something about this person that I like, or there's something I sense that this guy is somebody I need to talk to. And you just might get that email from that person, and it just makes that whole connection. So I think there's a good side to it, and you know, I'm obviously there's a negative side to it, but I think there's a lot of good that can be obtained, and we can help a lot of people out there as a result to get ourselves out there in order to make an impact in the community. And especially what SRT does, it's a lot different than how the paranormal community works, because technically we're not a paranormal team.
Right.
And right. We don't do paranormal research.
Right, so. And it doesn't fit the genre. It doesn't fit comfortably in any slot.
No, we don't. We're our own.
Right.
We're our own. But yet, you can associate us to say, hey, these guys will come in and they'll take care of a situation. They'll get the evidence. So I guess if you had to label us, you could label us as part of that paranormal type of, the structure that we follow might appear to be paranormal. We'll take the pictures, we'll get the evidence, but we're really not paranormal.
No, we're not. And we're not ghosts. You know, we don't do investigations. We go someplace where we know the event is happening. And we're not there just to get evidence. We get the evidence to prove what we say, to prove what they say. But we're a search and destroy when we go into those situations with that aspect. But what's coming up for us is a little different. This is the announcement I've been holding off on. I want to share it with the supporters that we have in Birmingham first. Now that I have, I'm going to let you know. In late August, myself, Joe, and other members of SRT and a production crew are going to Atchison, Kansas, and we're going to shoot a documentary called The Deep Darkness. It's based on the Sally House, based on Atchison, and the once-in-a-lifetime event of Solar Eclipse 2017, because we will be there, boots on the ground, in the Sally House, as that eclipse goes over the city of Atchison, Kansas. And this, no other investigative team, no other paranormal team, nobody else ever in 100 years, assuming that we're still here, then we'll be able to do what we do on that day. And it'll be a view of the paranormal from a perspective that only we can do. A perspective that you've seen, or heard anyway, here on Reflections in the Dark. And it's not so much a search and destroy mission. Nope, that's not what it is. We're going in there, first of all, to prove once and for all what's really in that house. And what's really going on in Atchison, what's really going on in Kansas, and from the research that we will present, what's really going on all over the United States and all over the world. So we are excited to talk about that. We'll talk about that a little more, of course. The documentary is a Firefall Productions film. It'll be in association with Firefall Media Group, which is the parent entity of Firefall Talk Radio. We're looking for partners. However you can partner with us, of course, we're looking for people to donate, to invest, however you want to participate. We're looking for in-kind support. Maybe you or somebody you know has a company, a motorhome company, you know, some way, something that we could possibly use to, A, promote their product that would keep us from having to buy that product. That's what in-kind support is. And then we're definitely looking for aerial support, of people willing to say, hey, I'm going to pray for you guys while you're there, and I will commit to this certain time. And like we've done in the past, we will set up a schedule. And so if you want to help out, if you have any ideas in that regard, or you want more information, you can write me at firefallmediagroup@gmail.com or go to supernaturalresponse.net and fill out the contact information, and I will get back to you, or Joe, or one of us will do that. But this solar eclipse is bigger than anything I could ever imagine. And the fact that it is so massive, first of all, there is a path of totality, which means there'll be total darkness. The sun will be completely blocked out in Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Starts in Salem, Oregon, ends in Charleston, South Carolina on the 33rd parallel. If you know anything about that, you know how significant that is. It also ends in the town where the first Masonic Lodge went up. It is going over the top of some major, major paranormal and New Age sites, Devil's Tower in Wyoming. The things that this solar eclipse has the potential of doing is amazing. If you don't know what a solar eclipse is, it is just the complete blocking out of the sun by the moon. And spiritually, according to the rabbinical teachings, it is the sign of judgment coming on the Gentile world. And the fact that it's splitting the United States in half, north and south, is pretty significant. It is a sign in the paranormal world, in the occult world, of a period of time, 1 minute to 2 minutes, I think in Atchison it's going to be over 2 minutes long, that the spirits draw negative energy. Solar eclipses create a period of darkness, both naturally and spiritually. Now, if you think about that, and if it's accurate, we'll be able to prove it because we'll be in the house with equipment. That's pretty substantial, that much activity. And by the way, I just mentioned the path of totality. The actual size of this eclipse from complete darkness and then gradually to slight darkness is 70 miles wide, which means it covers almost all of the United States.
There's so many different things going on. Just when you were talking, I was just getting bombarded by different images of, you're right, there are so many things happening, because you have what's going on in Kansas, okay, Atchison. You have what's going on with the Sally House. You have a lot of people who have experienced many things. Then you have the evidence department of it all, because you know that in the midst of all this, we are going to get a lot of evidence, and I firmly believe that. And then you have the eclipse, and when you pool everything in together, It says to me, we are going to be like in a war zone. That's how I look at it. It's
well,
like,
I forgot to add to the fact that the town is going to be filled with people. We could not get a hotel room, folks.
Right.
We're having to rent a house, and that took some favor and some help from somebody to do that, because every hotel room within a 20-mile radius is gone, because people want to be in Atchison when this thing happens. Even the townspeople are like, wow. I don't want to say they're freaked out about it, but they're shocked. So who knows how many hundreds of people are going to be in that town at that moment, paranormal enthusiasts, Wiccans, New Age people, just casual observers. Who knows? And we're hoping to interview them and get their perspective and give a complete broad view of this. This is not a hit job. This is not, hey, we're going to go in there and no. This is, we want to show you the whole picture, a picture that nobody else can because they don't have our experiential knowledge. And then to top it all out, I have the film background to do that. It just seems to be the culmination of a lot of part of our lives, and plus the fact that you were there 10 years ago. And going back, I mean, the whole story here, even if you weren't interested in the paranormal or the Sally House or the eclipse, this is a story from beginning to end that will fascinate you and cause you to think.
Absolutely. It's almost like you not being a football fan and then having the chance to be part of a Super Bowl or go to a Super Bowl. It's just, it's one of those things that is just, it's a once in a lifetime to time everything to the eclipse, to the 10-year mark, to everything the SRT.
And the 10-year anniversary of SRT, right.
And the 10-year anniversary and the 10 years since I basically have gone to the Sally House, and you bring it back and you just take everything now. And you're right. It's not a hit job. We really want to speak to
everybody.
Everybody. Honest people who are sincere in their beliefs, what they think is going on. To basically show how much this town is being fed by everybody's beliefs and their conviction and faith behind why they believe the way they believe it. And it's obviously probably way off from what we do, but
right.
The point is, yeah, I definitely think getting that perspective from everybody is just going to make the documentary more powerful. And if you're not a fan of all this, this is one show or this is one documentary that I think will definitely have people given an ear to it. I really do. I think that it's one of those things that I believe if anybody watches it, they'll walk away, whether they believe or not, fascinated by our discoveries, what we have to say, and the timing of everything.
Yeah, I know it's been done before. You can go on the internet and see, but not this. We're not just going to the Sally House. I mean, that's our main focus of the story, and we will be in it for two consecutive nights, the night before the eclipse and the night after. And we'll be in it during the eclipse. We're also going to visit the other sites. We're also going to visit some areas I've noticed have potential to be a part of the equation. We're going to interview people, historians, local people. Hopefully we're trying to get some former Native Americans whose bloodline traces back to that. This is a whole picture of the whole gamut of the story. And like I said, it's never been done before. And somebody would say, well, maybe you're telling too much. No, nobody else can do this story. That's the thing. There are people that can tell a part of it. They can try to tell some of it, but they can't do what we do. And I know this sounds arrogant, but if there are other people that have said it, nobody gets evidence like we do. They just don't. Well, you know, we had somebody who used to be on the team but then couldn't handle the dangerous missions that we take who said, you know, I've sat in houses all night long to get one whisper and possibly a real orb. And within an hour, and we had all this information, all these EVPs, all these orbs, and we were done. So what we do is unlike anybody else. It has to do with Joe's background, my background. Has to do with a lot of different things, and that becomes also the human interest part of the story. And that's kind of where I want to segue to is, you know, Joe, when you said you went to the Sally House in January of 2007, I think it was, you were going there from strictly the paranormal investigations. Hey, this is interesting. I always wanted to do this, and possibly if we do it right, there could be a show to come out of it. Because let's be honest, after 2004, when the Ghost Hunters hit Sci-Fi, as you said, everybody and their brother wanted a show. Everybody else wanted to be, you know, like Jason and Grant and Taps and do all that. Of course, they didn't understand how the TV industry really works. They didn't understand how that all works. But everybody wanted that. So you went there with the intentions of being productive, of having a life experience event, and boy, did you ever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you're right. When you think about the Ghost Hunters, Taps, you watch these guys who are plumbers and, you know, by day, and then at nighttime they're debunking houses and alleged haunted houses, and they go in there with the assumption that it's not haunted and prove me that it is. So the concept back then was something new. It was interesting. It was intriguing. It was relatively boring, you know, as far as watching this. But here's what I think happened, Richard. People were very fascinated with the fact that people were, that there were groups doing this, or a group that did this, right, going in there, getting evidence, trying to get evidence, taking pictures, using all this equipment. Everybody was in awe, like, wow, this is crazy. Now they got demonologists on the show, and this is just wow. And they were the first ones to really do it like that. So I get it. Then you start to, or at least what I did was like, okay, well, I'm a Christian. Maybe I can go in there more on a Christian level and try to get that evidence. And I want to show people evidence, but let me do it on a
You okay?
Wow, man. Blindside. So I wanted. Wow. Oh, give up, man. I don't even bother anymore. It's just. So anyway, blindsided. So I wanted to go in there and I wanted to give it a different angle, but I went in there with not enough depth. And well, I went in there.
You got blindsided. To play off of what just happened.
Yes, I totally got blindsided. I'm thinking, look, I'm going into the Sally house. I've got some connections, you know. I know some people in the paranormal. I know Jason. I can do this. You know, let me do this and let me give it a different angle. And I'm thinking that, hey, look, if we can get some sort of evidence, because we had gotten a decent amount of evidence in the Sally house, this is going to work. And then you get the reality, like you said, there's a lot to it. Then you get the reality of it's not going to happen. And what did I do? And you know, Richard, and I've told you this before, and I, you know, in one of the books that I wrote on it, I didn't do anything as far as I'm concerned. And this is the truth. I don't think I did anything that was positive. I went in there with good intentions. I did. I got blind. I got shock and awe with a lot of the evidence. But then I believe that maybe I can sell this and market it and you know, kind of cash in on everything. And I realized that I did everything wrong. And it was no wonder that it went bust. But then I said to myself, did it really go bust? Yeah, maybe on a media end or a television or a successful, aspect, it didn't. But what it did was open my eyes to, no matter how you cut it, there is something dark in that town. And if there's something dark in that town, and I know it's an inhuman, okay, entity, then I have to know. And at this point, because you second guess a lot of different things in your mind when you're going through this, that no matter what, I believe that it is demonic. It is a demonic entity, and therefore, if it's demonic, then we know that the devil is real, and we know that God is real. And then you start to reel it in and say, there's a bigger picture going on here. It's not about TV. It's about you making a difference in the spiritual realm, and right, and how do you do it? And that's what really happened. So I needed to mature. As far as I look at this, I needed to mature 10 years. 10 years I needed to mature to get me where I am today, to understand a lot of things. And now I can look at it in a whole different perspective with everything that we've been through. Now to go back with a different mindset, it's almost like I got my butt kicked by this big dude, and I have another opportunity to go against this person, and I'm wiser, I'm stronger, I'm older, and I'm ready to do it. And that's how I look at it. Like, I've got this second chance to do it right.
Right.
And that's what I believe that we will do. We will do everything right. We're not going to butcher everybody, you know?
No, actually, I want to make it real clear. The people in Atchison are good people. They're nice
Absolutely.
People. They're people that I will not disrespect. and I will not allow anybody else to disrespect. But they happen to live on a piece of land, in a city, in a state, in an area that I don't really think anybody understands. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, cut you off, but I've talked to a major mega church organization. And when I say major, it's like tens of thousands. And they knew nothing about what went on in Atchison. They knew nothing about solar eclipse 2017, and they knew nothing about the little bit I told about the paranormal activity that's 50 miles away from them. And I'm thinking, these people are living in a supernatural war zone, and they don't even know it.
Absolutely, and that's what makes this so powerful. There's so many different elements, so many different compartments to this that I think that with all the stuff that we can present in this documentary, it's going to cover so many different grounds that I believe there's a piece in it for everybody who's interested in the supernatural, has interest even in the paranormal, and also on the spiritual aspect, on a godly aspect. There is something in it for everybody to obtain and understand it. And that's what I think that is what's even makes it more powerful to me, that someone can learn from this in many different ways now. And of course, the Pickmans. I mean,
right.
There's the whole other element. You go in there, you go into the house, I go into the house, you know, I know what's going on with the Pickmans, I know what's happening with Tony, but this is the craziest thing, Richard, and well, you'll agree, I'm sure. They kind of get tossed to the side because you're so blinded by everything else that's going on, and you're trying to draw your own story, that even though they're part of it, they're kind of a little kicked to the side. But then I say to myself, but without them, it wouldn't really be anything. So I think that meeting Deb and Tony and the stuff that they've gone through and stuff that they've been part of and all those little things like that make it even more powerful to go back there, especially to be 10 years wiser into it, to talk to them, to find out where they're at now in their lives. And of course, to have the opportunity to sit and talk to you and hear things from different perspectives, that is even powerful in and of itself. So there's so many different stories going on running parallel to this documentary.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's almost like when you go through the menu in a movie, you get all the little scene selections. You could pretty well pick anything that suits you and you'll get something out of it.
Yeah, the human interest part of this is key to the whole thing. If our listeners don't know, they've been on our show twice. Deborah and Tony Pickman moved into the house, the Sally House, in Atchison, Kansas, 1993. They were new, you know, they weren't married that long. They just had a baby. Tony was from the town. They moved into the house. And short time later, paranormal activity started. It escalated to very dangerous attacks, and they, after about a year and a half, moved out. But they have been intertwined with this house now for 24 years. It has changed their life. I don't know if they'll say if it's changed it for the good or the bad. We'll just kind of let them tell their story, because part of what has to happen here is I would like to humanize them, in the sense that everybody goes in there, they do these talking head interviews with them, they use it to promote the Sally House, and then you're right, they kick them aside. That's not my intention. My intention is to spend some time with them and saying, you know, to show the long-term effect of living in a house like that, whether you turn it into a positive or not, as Deb says they've tried to do. There's a whole lot more to it, and they still live in the town. They live 0.6 mile away from the house. And I'd like to know, how does that affect them? And I think that part will be very interesting. And you're right, without them, because it's when they moved into the house that all the activity began. There's no record of it any time before then. There's also actually no record, folks, of anybody named Sally dying in that house. That is something that was tagged on the house by a psychic named Peter James and another psychic whose name I can't remember at the moment, a female. We have always said, and we always believe, that that was a charade, that was a deception. There is no Sally, and we'll be trying very hard to get you audio and video evidence to prove that.
Absolutely. And I think that's the greatest part about this, is kind of like how we always handle missions and doing the things we do, especially with the C conference. And when you do it, you know, your speakings and going to different various places, we're going to be able to tell a story. We're going to be able to bring that evidence to you and tie everything in where you'll see exactly what we're talking about. It's hard to, you know, we can explain a lot of it now, but until you live it and see what's going on, then you get more of an understanding of the big picture of what's happened in Atchison. And I believe this documentary is going to make you, or at least take you to the closest that you're ever going to be. If you have never been there, don't know too much about it, I think we can pretty well take you there to the best we possibly can. And that's how I want to look at it. We're there for Tony and Deb, talk to them as people, the people of Atchison, and then obviously doing the things that we do with SRT. But it's a combination of a bunch of little things that we need to do and will do to make this work. And that's what's exciting to me. There's so many different elements to this that I'm very excited going into it this way. And I believe that we will definitely deliver in this documentary.
You know, and especially tying it into the fact that we'll be there at a time when that eclipse, the last time that solar eclipse happened that split the United States like that, was August of 1776, the week after the last signature went on the Declaration of Independence. And it won't happen again for another 100 years. So when you tie all these things together, it's a story that can only be told by us in this documentary. And to make it a fair documentary, it's going to tell all sides of the stories. We're not going to force a perspective or a viewpoint upon you. We're going to present our case in the way that only we can, on every level, from scientific to historical, archaeological, and then spiritual, and present what we believe and what we find about the whole town, because like I said, we're going to all the sites and all the potential places that have been revealed in the research, and then you make your own opinion. We're not trying to force an opinion on you. See, the purpose of this is, I guess, in a way to educate, but also to take away all the smoke and mirrors of the whole paranormal genre from TV. And I've watched a lot of documentaries over the years, and especially since we decided to do this. And they're all essentially the same. They even use some of the same stock footage, which to me is just bad work. They don't even try to be different. They crank out the same story. They put people in there that really, and forgive me for saying this, there are certain people that should not be on TV. They should be on radio. And this is a visual medium. So this will be done professionally in a way that's not been done. It'll be done in a paranormal way that's never been done. And it'll be done in an SRT Reflections in the Dark way, which, of course, only Joe and I and the team can do.
Yes, it will be in a very SRT fashion, hopefully with not a lot of laughing. But I really can't I can't see that not happening, though. I know there'll be those moments. But I think for what we want to do, yes, it is. It will be done in a way that nobody could do it this way than SRT. And that's only because of what we've gone through, what we've experienced, how we've handled things, how we know, you know, certain things just happen. Because, look, going through an SRT mission, you break down every little thing. And it's not you just yourself. It's preparing yourself physically, mentally, spiritually. But it's also research. It's a lot of research on the land. And there's a lot of time. And that's the other thing, Richard. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about it, because you've got the time to do those things, because right. That's what you do. That's what you do. You break everything down, aerial views, satellite views. I mean, take us into the beginning of an SRT mission when you know that you're going to go somewhere. This is where you've been commissioned to go. What's the first thing that you do to structure that?
First, I stop laughing. Then?
I don't see that happening. I just don't.
Yeah. First of all, folks, we talked about doing the show tonight, and we said we would try not to laugh. And I wrote back and I said, I see an epic failure happening. And it did.
It did.
I was actually on the plane back from Birmingham thinking about, I'm sitting there half asleep. Oh, I got to work on this show. They started laughing out loud. People must have thought I was crazy. Anyway, when we know we're going somewhere, first of all, I spend a lot of time in prayer, and the Lord has blessed me with certain spiritual gifts that allow me to see into worlds. Whether you believe that or not is up to you, but I think the documentation verifies it. And then I begin to get a sense of what's going on. When you first started telling me about the Sally House, when I first came to your house 10 years ago to spend the weekend with you, which was really cool because we'd never met before, and you invited me into your home and put me up, and we broke bread together when I could still eat bread, and you showed me those orbs, and then you showed me the pictures, and you began to talk about it. And from a spiritual warrior perspective, I want to go here. I want to take this thing on. And some of that's still there, but at this point, that's not even an issue. Because if it rears its head and it wants to get nasty, it's going to lose. But I didn't know a lot about the Sally House. I've seen the shows. I watch a lot of television and do films from the perspective of being in the industry. And then you shared your experiences, and I heard from the other people that were there with you. And that's when the wheels started spinning. So now we flash forward over the years. We had Tony and Deb on the show twice, and the first time as we were talking, I shared some of my revelations with them that I was getting, and I remember Deb going, "Yes, yes, I've been trying to tell people that because she knew it too about what's causing it," and I even told them on the air I could probably pull the clip and say I would like to be able to come there and to help you and help out. And they said, "We'd love that, so we're going to follow up on that." So then we flash forward 10 years. It's always been in the background to go there. Once it was a go, then I began to go back to some of the conversations we've had, began to put them on paper, and then I began to do the research. And this is how an ESRT mission happens. I get all of the historical research. When was the town founded? What are the parameters? How big is the land? This all plays into it. I get an aerial view, as Joe said. I do that with Google Earth. I get a view from something called ley lines. There's a woman named Beth Hagen, who just coincidentally enough is from Atchison, Kansas, who created software that you plug into your Google Maps, and it shows you all the ley lines in the United States so that you can follow them and see where certain things happen. I know it's a pseudoscience, meaning they don't accept it as science, but we have found that almost every paranormal event, almost every major demonic event is somewhere near a ley line, and then there are conjunctions where all of these lines of energies meet, and those are the worst areas. So there's something to it. We know from our experience. So I do that. I get the aerials of that, and I begin to map out everything from, you know, what are the stories? What have people said? What is verifiable? What's not? If there are any stories out there, I look them up. I read them. I would share them with the other guys to get everybody's perspective, because it's always better to get multiple looks at things. And then we begin to map things out. We begin a plan of attack, if you will. And then I begin to look for what's being missed. What is the root of the problem? And the example I use on this show and also in the porch and also when I minister to people, if you look at any spiritual manifestation as a weed, don't tell me about the flower or the stem. I need to find the root, because if I don't find the root, I'm not dealing with the weed. Because if you, as you all know, if anybody who gardens, you just pull a weed from the top, it grows back. So to find the root of the problem, we have to go into, has there been blood spilled on the land? Has there been occult satanic activity on the land? What's going on with the people? What is their history? Did they bring it with them? Are they the magnet that attracted it? There's just so many levels. And then before we go on a mission, everybody on the team gets a report. They get a report on what the weather's going to be like, what the indigenous threats are, snakes, bugs, whatever, so that you're not blindsided in the natural while you're trying to do the spiritual. And the thing about the Sally House is nobody lives in the house. They do keep it up. They take care of it. And it's rented out for paranormal investigations, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. But it's profitable. Paranormal tourism is big business. So we're not, you know, I don't want the people in Atchison to think, these guys are coming in and ruin our business. No, we're just coming in and tell a story. And probably more than likely, there are going to be people that are going to say, I don't believe what these guys are saying, but I'm going to go visit it. So we're probably going to be the best salesmen you ever had. Or not. Who knows? Anyway, but it gives a picture for us as SRT when we go into something that we're not caught off guard. And yet we do get caught off guard because, like, the very first mission, we were told to go to this place in Woodbury, Connecticut, and there was this thing going on in this house, and this girl was being attacked, and people gave us money. It was a divinely ordained thing. Just me, Joe, and Larry went. It was the very first SRT mission. And then we got there and found out, well, we didn't ask enough questions because it really wasn't a house. It was a rotting out shack that had probably been there for 100 years with a mobile home attached to it. And there were blanks in the story. You know, thankfully, we did what we were supposed to do. We got some amazing evidence and changed the lives of one of the girls, the girl that invited us, not the girl that was being attacked, because the other thing we found out after the fact was she was drawing paranormal teams there to feed them to this demon. We actually spoke to two of those teams, one of them very famous. I would love to drop his name because he showed up there and went into the shack all arrogant, and the spirit threw a lamp at him, and he ran. He ran off the property. Two eyewitnesses can confirm that. And then another team went in there and tried to help, and then the father went home and got attacked. He got attacked, and his little boy, I think he was 7, he hears his boy screaming. He runs down the hall, and his boy is elevated, pinned to the wall by something. So, you know, there were a lot of blanks that, you know, when we went there, the girl in question was the draw. She was the hook. What she didn't count on was SRT doing what we do. And we took care of it. We cleansed it. We changed the lives of one of the girls. And now that property has been cleared, cleaned. There's this huge house on it. And we did what we were supposed to do. But there's a lot to this, more than the TV show. Because the show says, not only do they not fill in the blanks, if something doesn't fit the intention or their script, they'll either change it or drop it completely, which is, I think, a whole nother documentary in itself, to go talk to all these people, maybe thousands of people over the last 10 or 20 years that have done these shows, to find out, no, they didn't tell Mike's story. They told their story.
Yes. And, I mean, when I think about that first mission, that was the surprise for me. And you know, I segued in the beginning of the show as, you know, till you're part of an SRT mission, it's hard to really explain what to expect. But for me, going into that shack, into that mobile home, you know, that very first mission, I remember when we went in there and it was dark, it was cold, and you had this really eerie atmosphere.
Mosquitoes, spider webs, massive spider webs.
It was horrible.
Garbage, because it hadn't been lived in. There was a carcass of probably a raccoon, a squirrel or something on the ground that we now realize probably wasn't there to die, but might have been sacrificed.
Oh, when I think about it. But one thing that happened that was just amazing to me and for me was, When the three of us were in there and we started praying, we were praying in the spirit, and all of a sudden everything got warm, or at least all I could picture was an energy kind of field, almost like a protection, a hedge of protection. And we were in this bubble, and in this bubble was nothing but pure power. Pure power, the power of God.
Was this the first or the second time we went?
This was the first time.
Right.
And we're in there, and I'm like, you know, I got my eyes closed, and we're walking through, and then I said, you know what? That's power. That's the anointing. That's God. So I felt like no matter what was in there, we were in that protective part, and we were going to go in there and do seek and destroy. And that's what we really did. But what I didn't expect, Richard, and I don't know if it was the second mission or still this first mission. I cannot remember. I think it was the first mission. It was because it was you, me, and Larry.
You mean the attack that came afterward?
After, when we were
done. That was it.
Okay, so when we were done, we went to eat. We were hungry. And we went to, I think we grabbed a burger.
Yeah, your looping episode.
I could not get out of.
Well, let's back up here, and we may go over. I didn't think we were going to have enough here. First time we went into the shack, first of all, we're caught off guard. First of all, it's a high place. The Native Americans used to use it. There was a witch whose name went out of my head right now, Mary something, who her coven used to use that property, and their coven was still existed hundreds of years later in the town, which, by the way, two of those witches found us the next morning at the hotel. But we went in there, and the girl who really owned the property didn't know we were coming. Her best friend, whose life changed and is great now, pulled this on her. So she shows up, she's angry, and then she talks her into it. We go in there, like Joe said, we're prayed up. We've been praying for 24 hours because we're stuck in our hotel because this massive thunderstorm. And we don't feel anything demonic. We don't feel any presence when we just come out and go, and we have it on the tape. It was all dealt with before we got here. So then we go back and we're talking to the two girls. And for me, this what's really cool is that I have lived this way my whole life, but now we have it on camera. All of a sudden, I turned around, and Joe can tell you, in the middle of a conversation, I wheeled and headed back towards the house because I heard it. And I even said to Joe, I said it was in hiding. It thought we were done, and it made a noise. It came out. I heard it and went right back in there, and that's when everything changed.
That's right. That now I remember. Now it's coming to me. You're absolutely right. Then we went in there.
Right, and then that's when you know I went after it, and we hit it, and we got this EVP that originally I had edited the section where the EVP was in, and the real EVP first said, you know, why? One voice, different voice said why, as in why are you doing this? Then the second voice was very clear, was, I wish you dead, Richard. This thing called me by name, and I did not catch it then, because it was the first time we encountered Baal Berith. It was the first time, because we have that same voice everywhere we go. So then we leave the property, and if you've never been in the presence of that kind of an anointing before, the first time it happens to you, it throws you literally for a loop. And I'm not kidding. The first time it happened to me, it wiped me out so bad. I was doing an Easter production at Christian Heritage, and at the end of it, it was a play about John the Revelator, and when I spoke, I knew that wasn't my voice speaking. And I walked off stage and collapsed into the arms of Pastor Shelley, my mentor and spiritual father. He literally had to hold me up, and I said, what just happened? That wasn't me. He said, the Holy Spirit took you over and spoke for you. It took me 3 days to recover from that. And so I know when you get hit, your body feels that for the first time. And that's what happened to Joe. Because we got in the car and we said, let's go find some food. And so finally we find a McDonald's. This is really funny. We find a McDonald's. Joe, it's over there. It's over there, Joe. He finally finds the entrance to the place where McDonald's is. Everything else is shut down. Now, this isn't difficult.
That's crazy.
He can't get to the McDonald's. He's driving in circles. And now I'm looking at him going, what are you doing? And he goes, I don't know.
I'm just looping. I was looping.
And that's why we use the expression today, he was looping.
I was looping. Now, here's the craziest part about that. That was a Saturday.
Right.
I had band rehearsal on a Monday.
Oh, that's right.
So it's 48 hours.
That's right.
And I could not count off one of the songs.
That's
it was
funny.
A simple four count, and I couldn't count. And they says, Joe, four. I says, all right. And then they had to stop again, and they says, Joe, do you understand? It's just four count. Ready? One, two, three, four. Let's go. I couldn't even find the time in my head to count. I remember that.
But that's the funny part. The not-so-funny part was we all immediately came under attack. Larry's, both your water heater blew while we were there. His blew when we got home. Larry got that freaky voicemail that the demon left on his phone, that the voicemail causes an EMF detector to go off. My wife, when I was editing that clip, said, "Can you please shut your door? That's really creeping me out. That really bothers me." I came home, and immediately, that was a Monday, I think I came home on a Monday. Monday night, I go to bed, and I'm smelling a burning smell. And I know it's electrical, so I go around the house, I touch all the outlets, I can't find anything. And I just laid my hands on the walls, and I said, "Lord, protect us." I knew it was an attack. I had a friend of mine come over, a master electrician, told him where I thought it was. We had had a new microwave inserted above the stove. He went up to where it was plugged in, and turned and looked at me and said, "I want to explain to you how these outlets are made. And first of all, when there's a short, your circuit breaker goes, so this doesn't happen. This is tested to last for a certain number of degrees." He turns around, he shows me the outlet, and it's melted like chocolate. He said, "Your house should have gone up in flames." He said, "You should be dead." So it was an immediate, and I've kind of lived with that my whole life. That's kind of, you know, been my life, especially since I got saved. But then you experience it, you know, Larry gets it, and it's never ended. And since we took this mission to come and expose what's going on there, I will tell you this without going into too much detail, because that'll be part of the story. Normally we don't get attacked like this till about a week out. This attack started 5 months before.
Huh.
And they've never ended.
And they've never ended. And that's right. And don't forget, that is also when the dog flew across.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're going to have to go over. We got to tell the people this, because we're going to go over. So at the end of the videotaping, and I'm probably going to have to show this clip. I've really been saving it for whatever film we do. All of a sudden, Joe's video camera, the tape breaks up, pixelates, the sound distorts, and it was 8:45. Joe finds out from his mother that she and his son Joey are watching TV, and this doll of, should have been a clue, this doll of an Indian maiden kind of thing flew across the room. Flew like 3 or 4 feet and put a nick in the wall. So we actually interviewed his mother at 8:45, at the same time that picture pixelated and that spirit manifested, it attacked Joe's home and caused that doll to fly across the room.
Wow.
And you got home. You got home and your son was freaked and your mom was freaked.
That's right. I just, it's hard. Like you say, when you look back at it, you know, when you're going through the mission, you're going through everything, obviously your adrenaline is going. You want to get the mission done. You want to be successful. But when you stop and reflect on some of the things that has happened to us in these, you know, missions, the things that were going on, the stuff that happens after the mission or prior to it, just before it is attacking in so many ways that the investigation or that mission itself, while you're actually physically there, is not the problem. It's just prior when they know you're coming, and then the fallout afterwards. So yeah, it is definitely a thing that's emotionally, it wears on you, and it only takes a certain type of person to be able to handle this. And that's why, you know, our missions are not like investigations, as we said before.
Which is why nobody else takes our missions, which is why Joe can tell you, somebody will get a case, "Oh, that's an SRT thing. You need to call those guys." Because nobody wants to deal with that. They don't want the fear factor. Because when you go into the presence of that kind of power, your knees will buckle, your stomach will churn, you won't be able to think. You know, you'll break out in a sweat. I laugh. I shouldn't laugh. It's been my whole life, so it doesn't do that to me. But it's what happens afterward. It's the retaliation. It's the long-term effects and probably the physical effects. You know, I know that I have thyroid problems in my lineage, and I know I've gone through some high stress times, but I also think being in the presence of the power and the demonic energy that we've been in front of for the last 10 years has also damaged us physically.
Absolutely, and it has. There's no doubt in that. And it goes beyond it being in our mind. we have definitely have the evidence to back up.
Mm-hmm.
We have the, you know, we have the experience of going into these places, and we know what's real and what's not real. And that's where we're at. And that's why I have to say that this documentary, because I know we're wrapping it up,
right.
This documentary will tell everything that we need to tell the way we want to tell it. And I do believe once the world can view this and see this, they will have a whole different understanding of the supernatural. Probably be should be a little bit rattled by the paranormal world and how these TV shows kind of don't paint the picture of what is really going on. But above all, people will know who SRT is, and that is our main objective. So we can reach more people, and they can find us even more after this. So I'm looking at this as a platform to also be a good future endeavor for SRT and what we need to do. This yeah. might be the one. Well, this will.
This
be
is
the
what
one
we've been
we
waiting
need.
For, and this
exactly.
is what we've been held back for, because there's the Deep Darkness is the name of the documentary, and this is only the first chapter of multiple stories that we think we need to tell. So, if you want to be a partner, you want to help us, you have ideas, you go to supernaturalresponse.net and write us, or write me at Firefall Media Group, all one word, lowercase, @gmail.com, because Firefall is the producer. You know, I'm glad we did this, because when we first started talking, I was so tired, I was burnt out. I wouldn't have done the show had I not committed to doing it, but now I'm glad I did. We had a great show, great information. I know we have piqued your interest, and now it's time to get busy. We've been shining a light into the darkness on Reflections in the Dark for 7 years. It will be 7 years, but it's time to do that on a much bigger global level, from iTunes and Amazon and all these other places, but from movie screens and film festivals, and really do what's never been done before and take Reflections in the Dark to a level that I don't even think we knew. Great show, brother.
Absolutely. I loved it. Awesome show. And this is what it's all about. This is what we live for. And I'm glad we did this. And hopefully in the next coming weeks and coming months, we'll be able to keep everybody informed on what's going on in our progression with the documentary.
Amen. So we will keep shining the light. That's what we do here at Reflections in the Dark, because, folks, it's really dark out there. There is a deep darkness. And we're going to shine the light into it. I'm Richard Gunn on behalf of Joseph Trone, all of SRT. This has been Reflections in the Dark on Firefall Talk Radio.